Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Friday, October 14th, 2011. I'm your host, Greg Luca, and I am joined today by one alligator writer and one guy from Fightin' Gators, if I can get that correct the rest of the show. We'll see. We have Tyler Jett.
Good to be back. Got some breaking news on the podcast for anybody who isn't connected to the internet but somehow hears this podcast.
And it's really exciting. You're going to have to wait another 30 seconds for that one because we have to introduce from FightinGators.com. We have Cody Jones.
Good to be here. Yeah, if you're finding your breaking news here, you might have some problems.
All right. Well, yeah, that breaking news is that Jacoby Brissett will start against Auburn this weekend. So I think that was something that was kind of predictable because Driscoll's ankle was a little bit unsure and he played against LSU last week. But we'll get into that a lot more a little later in the show when we talk about quarterbacks as part of our preview. We actually filmed the intro at the end, to be completely honest. So that's why at first we're kind of unsure, but We do know now that Jacoby Brissett will be the guy, so it doesn't change our analysis any. We're also going to talk about Florida's running game, get a little bit more Mike Gillisley in the mix, which is something people have been clamoring for, and he actually looked pretty good last weekend, so we'll talk about the running back situation. Getting into Florida's defense, they have another stiff test this weekend. They're going to have to stop Auburn's powerful running attack. They got guys like Ontario McCaleb, Michael Dyer. We talk about Kyle Frazier, kind of their running quarterback, so that's pretty much what the Auburn preview is going to be like. We wrap it up with our Gator Guarantees as usual. And before we get into all that, I just want to remind you that you can send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org. So always looking out for that stuff, and we're glad to have your guys' feedback. Okay, we're going to start our Florida-Auburn preview, and the natural place to start for Florida is quarterbacks. There's some reports floating out there this morning that Brissett's going to be the starter. We're not 100% sure on that sort of thing right now, but who do you guys think should be the starter for Florida this weekend?
I think it should be Jacoby Brissett. Let's be honest, like, he obviously didn't impress anybody last week with 94 yards passing, but one very fun pass to Andre DeBose. Having said that, I still think he looked actually pretty comfortable dropping back, something Driscoll did not look comfortable doing. Also, I feel like you got to give him one more week. I mean, you threw him into the Lions Den there in Death Valley, and I mean, it's not fair to have him start one game there and then basically say, all right, you had your shot, you didn't do enough. Like, give him another week, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think he showed enough to where you can sell yourself on starting him, and he did look good. His presence within the pocket, I thought he moved well within the pocket, even though LSU kind of got to him a little bit. But he threw a nice deep ball. I thought, obviously, the DeBose ball was interesting in that DeBose was wide open. It wasn't really that hard to catch or anything like that. But even his interception that Matthew had in the end zone wasn't a horribly thrown ball. It was just kind of giving his receiver a shot to go up and get the ball, and Matthew just made the better play. So I like his arm a little bit. I thought his accuracy looked pretty good, and obviously he had his freshman moments. But I think he definitely deserves a shot to start again.
Plus, yeah. I'm not so sure about like Driscoll's ankle necessarily. I don't buy the fact that he is healthy enough to really look good. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that's the thing that we don't know about and we probably won't know about now. Some of the reports have said that Driscoll should play. It's a little bit on Saturday as well, but I don't know. At this point, I think you just kind of let Brissett have another start. That's what at least I would do, but I'm not sure otherwise.
Yeah, I haven't seen enough of either guy to be able to say for sure who's better, and I don't know if the coaching staff feels they have either, but if Driscoll's healthy, I could see a scenario where he gets a shot if he had just blew away Brissett in practice, but again, like you said, Brissett didn't look that bad last weekend, so it wouldn't hurt to go with him again. Do you think if Brissett starts again that we'll see some marked improvements from last weekend in his play?
I think that you will see a better product, if for no other reason than the fact that Auburn's defense isn't nearly as good as Alabama or South. What's they played last week?
LSU.
LSU. Okay. They're pretty good.
Okay, yeah. LSU's defense was much better than Auburn's defense. I just named the whole SEC trying to come up with that team that they played. So anyway, that team out west, not Florida State, but the other one, LSU. I feel like their defense is just so good that is going to handicap pretty much any quarterback, and especially a freshman making their first start.
I think Brissett will also be in a better position to make some plays this week. They said they're going to open the playbook up a little bit. Last week it was kind of weird in that there wasn't really much of a chance, especially early, for him to get involved in the game. I think part of that was by design, so you don't throw a freshman out there in the middle of an environment like LSU and have him throw the ball 40 times or anything like that. But I think they will open things up a little bit this week and give him a shot to be more productive.
Here's the thing that stood out to me. I think with most freshman quarterbacks having to start in that environment, they would be really nervous and they would look really rattled. But when he looked as really calm, he seemed really composed, and he seemed to have kind of a command of what was going on. It wasn't like he looked very uncomfortable. Obviously, the defense made it rough for him, but he didn't look personally to be like out of his element. So that makes me think that I'm not so sure how much of a jump he could make, because I feel like that would be the biggest difference from week one to week two. I don't know if it's going to be a lot of the same, But I think the defense is going to be the biggest difference between last week and this week.
Well, I don't – I guess I kind of agree with that to an extent about the defense. But I don't understand how your logic – and you did this in the paper too where you said he looked really calm, so therefore he can't get better.
Well, no, it's not that he can't get better. Well, no, you kind of did say that. But he can't get more calm.
Well, yeah, but that's not, like, the point. Like, I feel like there's other things around that. The bigger difference is the fact that Charlie Weiss's play calling was super conservative in the first half. It was either a wildcat package or it was a double tight end, two running back, one wide receiver package. Like, he ran that almost the entire first half. Brissett can't do much of that. He was 5 for 6 in the first half, or the first quarter for 5 passing yards, and a lot of that was because all the routes were so short.
Okay, but you think that'll change in terms of the routes they're running and the stuff they do
for him?
Yeah,
I do think it'll change.
Well, why?
Because he's got another week under his belt. I think that they've realized, like, you can't do that. Like, they can't be that conservative and get away with it no matter who they play. Just by necessity, they will open it up more.
But with what he showed last week, you think he's ready to open it up more? They didn't even have him on the field for more than half the game.
Yeah, but that's not really his fault. That's just what they decided to do, is run a wildcat. Like, I don't think
But doesn't that have to be, like, if he was good enough to be able to be running all these plays and that they would have a lot of success with him in there, wouldn't he have stayed in there?
I'm not saying he's going to run, like, the whole gamut of the offense, but I think he's going to get more, he's going to get more packages out there. They're going to do something different just out of another week of having, being the starter in practice.
I think they'd like to, but I don't know if showed enough to potentially be ready for more until he's kind of mastered the package they have for him now.
I think he mastered the handoff package.
Cody, what is your take?
You kind of have to throw him out there and do a little more, I think, just because you realize last week, I don't care what defense they're playing, you can't win a game calling those kind of plays that they did last week and being that conservative. I don't think they have a choice, regardless of whether or not he's ready for more. I think they have to be more conservative, or more open on offense, not more conservative.
All right, well, when you say more aggressive, what exactly do you mean by that? Because I felt like they took a bunch of deep shots in the game, like the one to DeBose that connected and a bunch of others that didn't. So.
Did they, though? I only remember, like two. Or, yeah.
Well, I mean, one was, like, super silly.
I think
just
there was, like,
a terrible throw.
I think there was, like, 3 or 4, and he only threw the ball, like, 14 or 15 times.
Yeah, there was 3, and...
In terms of, like, legitimate deep shots, that's a better percentage than Brantley would put up.
Well, that's I think he's going to throw more than 14 times.
There was no, like, mid-passes either. There was, like, a couple of deep shots and a lot of short stuff. It wasn't,
like, screens,
consistent. Yeah, a lot of screens. Like, that first pass is for -8 yards. It's not, like, his fault. They told him to throw a screen pass.
So you're trying to see more intermediate stuff this week for him?
More normal passing, yeah. I mean, not everything in the flat and then a couple shots deep. I mean, yeah, some intermediate stuff.
I'm
5, 10-yard, 15-yard passes.
I'm saying more passing in general, too. Like, you only said he threw 14 times. I think they'll open that up a little bit and give him more of a shot, because he showed I thought some pretty good things against LSU, so I think you give him a chance and open things up and see what he can do.
All right, that's fair. I mean,
there's some things
like,
to take away. Also in the paper, you were saying that throw to DeBose is just lucky. I don't know how you determine that.
Well,
because
the guy playing defense fell down and DeBose was way out of bounds and, like, came back in and made the catch. It was just
a
weird
play. The DB was, like, pushed him out of bounds. Like, it was a normal play defensively. I mean, DeBose is just faster than him.
It was a pretty unusual play.
Was it as unusual as DeBose's deep ball against Alabama? Because DeBose just beat
guy,
too.
Yeah, but that's because he just, like, ran a straight line, and then Brantley just put it in his hands. It
was
different from the one with Brissett, because DeBose was kind of out of bounds and had to, like, veer back in. Because
DeBose got pushed out of bounds is what made it different.
Yeah,
what
that's
made it
weird.
I guess. It's not
it's
that
like
weird.
A, it's like
but
a timing thing with the quarterback and the receiver, and it's way off when he's out of bounds. So that's not like a – they don't practice that. He's not coming in from out of bounds making catches.
When he threw the ball, didn't he see that DeBose was out of bounds, though? I think that's my interpretation of the play, at least.
I'm
is
not saying
that,
it was a bad throw or that it was completely lucky, but you're not going to
you
see that.
You did say it was completely
play.
Lucky, though.
I did not completely lucky. There
well,
was
you said it was,
involved,
you said it was lucky. You said lucky. Yeah, but then why would you say it then? You would say it then because you thought it was more lucky than,
yeah,
like, normal.
I didn't. I just explained why.
Yeah, but you're stupid.
All right, fine. So then agree to disagree.
I agree that you're stupid.
Fine. If
hey, see, you agree that
yeah,
you're stupid.
I'm real dumb.
Okay.
If Driscoll plays this week, are they running the same kind of stuff they ran with Brissett last week, or is he experienced enough that they can open it up for him, too?
I don't know. I mean, we haven't seen anything from him that suggests that. Granted, he's been put into weird situations. The Alabama game was really unfair to him. They had to throw the ball a lot with him, throw him in the shotgun. He didn't look comfortable at all, ever. Like, that 31-yard run, that was a lucky play, Greg. But no, I mean, in all seriousness, like, he did not even look like he wanted to throw the ball a lot of times against Alabama. Granted, that's not fair to measure him on, but we haven't seen him with a full week of practice.
This week's side.
By the way, I think it's the third week in a row we've had an ambulance drive by the Alligator podcast. No, there's a lot of emergencies going on.
Games
go to
a rough
place
on Friday mornings.
I think you could see maybe the same thing with Driscoll. You know, he's looked against Kentucky, he threw the ball, I believe, in one of the earlier games of season 2. He threw the ball a lot more often. So I think that he has – I would say at least the same level of experience as Brissett. Obviously not in the environments like he's going to see on Saturday, but at least with the play calling and the downfield passing, I think you – and then the other thing I think they learned at LSU is just that you can't be that conservative and expect to win a game. And this being a game that I think is winnable for them, they can't come out and throw two screens in the first three plays or something like that and expect to win.
Right. I thought with Brissett, like we were talking about, they did a pretty good job with the screens and kind of just the short tight end routes. Because on play action, there was a lot of stuff where LSU knew that it was Jacoby Brissett in the game and knew Florida was going to want to run a lot. And I think Florida took advantage of that to some extent with some of the short passes, but
did not lead to
big numbers for him or a whole lot of success. But it was they were open guys. Like Reed was kind of all alone on a couple of those. So
alone 1 yard from the line of scrimmage.
No, he had a couple plays that were 7 or 8, or maybe one play that was 7 or 8, but.
Maybe one.
All right, so maybe I'm just an idiot again, but
remember that time you wrote that column about UAB is going to be Florida? How'd that work out?
I said they could, and that didn't work out very well.
Yeah, okay.
All right, yep. I don't even know how I'm going to recover from here. What I was going to ask about was the Wildcat stuff. Do you think we see kind of just as much of that? Because I guess my point was that I thought they were doing that by necessity because they couldn't run as much of the offense with Brissett. But you seem to think that was just a choice they made to get the run game going.
I think that they'll run it. I think they'll continue to run it. I mean, I think that's a little bit true that they needed it by necessity to an extent, but it was because they couldn't run the ball traditionally. I don't necessarily think it's because Brissett didn't know the offense. I think it's the fact that they running the normal style of just hand it off straight ahead to Chris Rainey or Jeff Demps or whoever's in the game. Obviously not Jeff Demps last week, but the week before. They just haven't been able to establish the run. Now, you put them in the Wildcat, it gives you a different wrinkle. You have a couple different directions you can go with it. It's just more difficult to defend for LSU. Now, LSU knew, regardless of what package, that Florida was looking to run the football, so you might as well just go with the Wildcat, because it's not like you had any deception anyway.
Yeah, I think we'll see maybe a little bit less, but probably around the same number. I kind of like the Chris Rainey Wildcat a lot more than, I guess you can't really call it the Wildcat, but when Burton's in there, whatever that formation is.
That's still a Wildcat.
I guess it is, yeah.
It's the Wildcat that people call it the Wildcat, but to me it's only the Wildcat when you do the Rainey stuff where the line's offset and they have the guy in motion every play. To me that's the Wildcat.
Yeah, it's like Burton and two backs, whatever it is. I just don't feel like that's very effective at all. I feel like that's just kind of just smoke and mirrors, just trying to confuse people for the sake of doing something different. I just don't think it's all that effective as much as if you get Rainey in there and get some extra blockers and try to get him going, because they really haven't been able to run the ball. So I think that's one way to maybe try and get that going. But, I don't know. I think we'll see probably about the same of just that formation this Saturday.
Okay, we got some breaking news on the podcast just now. It turns out the Gators have announced that Jacoby Brissett will start against Auburn. We already talked about that, so we're just going to keep moving right along with the Wildcat stuff. Last week, from what I saw, it was 50% of the snaps Brissett was in there, then about 35% of the Burton stuff, and then the rest was kind of Rainey. How do you guys see that mix breaking out this weekend, if you had to guess? Where do you think the snaps will go between those three?
I'm going to say we'll go 60% Brissett, 20 Driscoll. This is fun, just making stuff up as I go.
Yeah, that's what and the then, podcast is all about.
And then we'll say the extra, and then I think it'll be 10 and 10 with Burton and Rainey.
Okay, so you have Driscoll getting 20% of the snaps. Is that a sub-package thing? Or?
A little bit. I think they'll kind of run, because they have said they're similar quarterbacks. I think it'll be a fairly similar set as to when Brissett's in there. Maybe a little bit more of moving Driscoll and kind of moving the pocket a little bit and getting him out there and throwing. Because that's the thing, is when he's thrown the ball so far this year and kind of looked up and down, it's been just normal dropback stuff. I think that's the thing with him, is you've got to get maybe some run-pass options with him and get him on the move where he's comfortable moving like that. So I think that maybe you set that up with it and see how it goes from there. So I'll say 20% with Driscoll.
That's interesting. I did not kind of envision a scenario where they played both of the quarterbacks. I could still see some of that Wildcat stuff, but I did not see a scenario where they got Driscoll in there, because they kind of said during the week, one thing Muschamp said that stood out to me, was that they wanted to have one guy just step up and prove that he's the guy. And I doubt that happened over the week with Driscoll being injured and just not really knowing what you're going to get from him for sure yet. But Tyler, do you see where they could play both of the quarterbacks on Saturday?
Someone asked Charlie Weiss about that on Tuesday, and he said that he could see them running two quarterbacks in the game. I'm going to say my breakdown would be 56% Brissett, just like last week.
It's a little low.
It's by design.
Okay.
It's a little bit low. I'll go 14% Driscoll, so that puts me at 70%. Thank you. And I would go 30% that Wildcat package, 20 Burton, 10 Rainey. They seem to like to run the Burton stuff more than they do the Rainey to me. Like, I don't know why they like that. Like, I like the Rainey stuff more, but it doesn't seem like Burton gets it more.
Well, it really does.
I like the Rainey stuff more in theory, but the Burton stuff last week was where they had that drive at the end of the first half that was probably among the best they've looked on offense that whole game. So, I mean, while it doesn't seem like it's something great, maybe the results speak for themselves a little bit on that one.
It's kind of the Trey Burton life in general. It doesn't seem like something great. It seems like things just keep happening. Yeah.
Talking a little bit about the running game, again, Gillis Lee had a strong game against LSU, and there's been talk this week that he could be more involved. So how do you see carries going? Is he kind of right there with Rainey and Demps? Or, I mean, I guess Demps' ankle kind of throws a little wrench in that.
Yeah.
Where do you see the carries working
out? I think Rainey starts off the game getting the most carries. I think it'll end up being Rainey will have the most carries, Gillis Lee will have second most. Maybe 5 carries less than Rainey. I don't know. They're going to try to get the ball to Rainey, even if he's not having success, because you know there could be just that one run where somehow Rainey gets to second level and he just busts a 70-yard run and it's the change of the game. So they're going to keep feeding it to him. But Gillis Lee is the more consistent runner, in my opinion. I think he was the more consistent runner last year, too. Like, it seems like he always gets the ball. He's always good for, like, 5 yards consistently, no matter who they're playing on defense.
I'm really excited to watch this game for a couple of reasons, but the biggest one, I think, is that we kind of get to see what the staff means when they say things like that, because things that in the past couple of years we've seen, like, you know, Urban Meyer said, you know, this guy's going to get so much playing time this weekend, and talked about the Joe Hayden Wildcat, and there's been so many different things that Meyer always talked to the media about and never really ever happened. I mean, there was always talk, Deontay Thompson's freshman year, you know, he could see action this weekend, and he ends up redshirt. And there's always been things that kind of came out of nowhere that Meyer would give lip service to, but never happened on the field. So we kind of get to see, what is this staff like? Are they actually going to be truthful with us? And when they say that Gillislee will see increased carries, does he actually see it this weekend? And I think he does, just because of how effective he looked last week. I don't know if they really have a choice but to get him the ball more often. So I think he'll be the second leading guy. I'm still a little concerned about Demps' ankle and how healthy he is just yet, but I think it's really hard to say Rainey doesn't lead the team in carries, but I think Gillislee will be the number two guy this weekend.
And Florida as a whole is going to get a little bit of a breather this week, facing a much worse rushing defense. In 3 SEC games this week, or in 3 SEC games this season, Auburn is averaging 212.7 yards a game. That's what the defense is giving up, and that's 9th in the SEC out of 12 teams. So they're not a great rush defense.
Right, yeah, and looking at kind of Florida's back situation, I was of the opinion that Gillis Lee wasn't really a great, like, option compared to Demps and Rainey, because he's not that much bigger, but just thinking about it some more, I've kind of changed my stance on that, because I feel like, to some extent, downhill running is not, like, a size thing. It's just, like, a state of mind that you just see a hole and you get upfield quickly, and he seems to have that, and those guys don't.
It's also a little bit of a size thing. Like, he's still 15, 20 pounds bigger than Rainey. At 205, Rainey's, what, 180? He's listed at 190, right? Like, around there, and we got to believe he's smaller than that.
But, like, compared to Demps, even, Gillislee's not that much bigger.
Demps is even smaller than Rainey.
No, that's not accurate.
Well, Demps is, like, what is he, 188? He's listed, like, 188.
Is he listed smaller?
We're going to have to get the roster.
He's listed smaller, I think.
He definitely looks a lot thicker than Rainey is.
Well, he's also shorter, isn't he?
I don't think it's enough to make up for the weight difference.
I don't know.
We got to get the roster on this one. Anyway, while we're talking about that, just do you guys think that Gillis Lee's style is something that's kind of more of a fit for Florida's offense compared to what guys like Rainey and Demps are trying to do out there?
I mean, Rainey keeps talking about how in high school they ran the I formation. He was so successful in it. But I think that was also because his team was always just way better than every other team they faced. I think Gillis Lee is a better fit for the I formation, that downhill style.
Yeah, I think this is where they kind of want to go with this offense and recruiting the next couple of years, is going to those downhill type backs. Gillislee is that kind of guy, regardless of how big he actually is, but he does seem to, it's something Weiss talked about, he's a guy that kind of seeks out contact and really looks forward to that and would rather run through guys. And it is really interesting because he doesn't look like a bigger guy, but whenever guys try to tackle him, they do seem to bounce off him a little bit. So I think he does give this offense a little bit of a different look.
Right, and this is something we haven't talked about. I wonder if you guys have a take on this. Florida's offensive line, just do you think they're more suited for kind of a back who's going to get up through the holes real quick, or are they kind of more the athlete types who are going to try to stretch it out and maybe be more effective on those Demps Rainey edge runs that they've been trying to do a lot this season? You guys have a take on that either way?
I mean, I guess just based on size, I would assume that Florida's offensive line would be better running stretch plays because those just require more agility, which I think would be their strength, whereas a straight-ahead run would require more downhill blocking. I guess that's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the tackles like Chaz Green, Matt Patch, and Xavier Nixon. They're all pretty good athletes that can get out and run quite a bit. So I'd say that that would probably be what would suit this offense the best for those guys to kind of get going. But then you've got guards like Winger and Halpio. I don't really know how athletic those guys are as far as pulling and everything. But I feel like that would probably be best to be that that stretch type offense.
Right. Before we wrap up the backs, I have the roster up now. Demps is listed at, that's kind of key, but 5'7", 191.
Okay.
Gillislee is listed at 5'11", 198, so 7 pounds there. And Rainey is listed at 5'9", 174.
Wow. I thought Rainey was like in the way off on that one.
Rainey's a little guy. But
I knew that, but I figured they had listed him. Last year, I think they did list him insanely big, and then he got arrested.
205.
Yeah. last year, I swear, they had him listed at like 190 on the roster, and then he got arrested, and the arrest report had like 170, and they had to like answer to that. So this year, like, all right, let's get ahead of this and put his real weight.
In case he gets arrested again.
Yeah. You don't want to, like, have to deal with that again. That was the most embarrassing thing.
Yeah.
The whole situation with Brittany.
we're on the offensive line a little bit. Them as a whole, their play has not been great. And we saw Passion get more start over Xavier Nixon last weekend. Just, I mean, do you guys think the offensive line's a real problem point? Is there anything they can do to fix it? Or is this just kind of how it's going to be the rest of the way?
Oh, I think they're just an average offensive line. You kind of pinpointed this in a way in your column today where you kind of talked about the fact that we don't really know that much about Florida because of the fact they played 4 bad teams and beat them, played 2 really good teams and lost to them, and they're somewhere in the middle as a team. And I think this week we'll get a better understanding of it. But I just think that the offensive line isn't great. I think it's mediocre. It's not bad, but they're just facing really good front sevens and just getting beat by them.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's what's kind of funny about this team is we still don't really know who it is, but it kind of goes to every position group as well, especially the offensive line. They gave up, I believe it was 2 sacks the first 4 games, but played some really bad defensive fronts. Then you face Alabama and LSU, and they gave up 5 in the last 2 games. So they have kind of gotten exposed a little bit, but I think this will be an interesting weekend where we can kind of actually gauge how good this offensive line and really this whole team actually is.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you guys. I think if I had to pick, I would say they're kind of average, but like we said, it's hard to tell from what we've seen so far. And my only concern would be that Auburn doesn't necessarily give us a clearer view from just the offensive line standpoint, if only because Auburn's run defense hasn't been that great, but we'll see what happens. Last thing on the offense, it seems like every week I'm like, which receiver do we think is going to step up, and how come these guys don't do anything? And every week there's no real answer. Last week I think receivers had like 2 catches, maybe DeBose had one and Hammond had one, so do you guys see anything from any of the pass catchers, be it wide receivers or tight ends, that you think is noteworthy compared to the same stuff we've been saying over and over?
No.
I really want to ride this Jordan Reed thing until it dies, and maybe it died weeks ago. I don't really know, but I don't understand why he's not more involved in the pass game. I think he's a really good athlete and obviously would be beneficial for younger quarterbacks, but what do I know anyway?
Switching over to defense, Florida's primary challenge this weekend, as it's been the last 2 weeks, is going to be to stop the run. They've given up a combined 464 yards to LSU and Alabama on the ground after being so good through the first couple weeks. What does Florida have to do to get that turned around, facing another tough team this weekend in Auburn?
Their linebackers have to play better. That's what I would
say. Is
that
all it comes down to?
I mean, they've been getting smacked around the last couple weeks.
Yeah, it's been ugly. I think, what did Bostic have, like 3 tackles against Alabama?
Yeah, he got whooped.
Yeah, it was ugly.
Jelani Jenkins gets benched in the second half against LSU.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, do you guys think that's a good move for Florida? Because I like what I've seen out of Michael Taylor so far this season. He seems to be more of like an aggressive type of linebacker, a guy who goes after the play, whereas Jenkins and Bostic seem to kind of let it come to them a lot of the times.
Listeners of the podcast know that I'm real high on Michael Taylor. Jelani Jenkins is just an undersized linebacker, and this is the problem last year. Like, we talked about this in the preseason with the linebackers. They said this stop the run was not a problem. It was like, against good rush defenses, you guys didn't stop the run well. And they're like, well, we just need to be better leaders. No, you need to be bigger and more physical, and they haven't been able to do that, and it's going to continue to be a problem this week because Auburn's just as good at running the ball as anybody they played. In fact, they might be better. Auburn in 3 SEC games, 257.3 yards rushing, which is the best in the conference. Michael Dyer's a very good running back.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting, watching them trying to tackle Dyer, because like Ware is obviously good. I don't think he's Dyer or Trent Richardson level, but he was bouncing off people last weekend, and I think that's why they put Taylor in there to bring some actual physicality to that linebacker position. I actually like him quite a bit, too. He not only is he aggressive, but I just feel like he's the best tackler of the linebackers, and that's been something that they've lacked for a while now. So I think that's something else that he brings to that position.
Yeah, I know this sounds stupid, but like,
They just can't tackle. That's what I'm trying to get to. Like, the bottom line is if you can't tackle, you're not going to stop the run, and that's the biggest issue. It's a very rudimentary thing, and it's something you can really solve other than saying if you can't tackle, you can't play. Like, that's why you got to have Michael Taylor in there. Is you can say what you want about him, that he's young, maybe he doesn't know the defense as well, but at least if he sees a guy with the ball, he has a chance of bringing him down, and you can't say the same thing about Jelani Jenkins at times. You can't say the same thing about John Bostic at times, and that's going to hold your whole defense back. Anybody see Matt Elam get flattened?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was embarrassing.
It really was.
That was, like, the worst hit I've seen him take, or anybody on the Florida defense take all season.
That's how all the big plays, I feel like, for LSU happened last weekend, was there's one-on-one, Spencer Ware's running right at a Florida defender, and just bounces off and keeps going.
Yeah, you can watch a lot. You can learn a lot about a defensive player by just looking at their feet. And a lot of times, they weren't running forward either. They were just kind of sitting there hoping to catch the running back. And when you're doing that, you're not going to make a good tackle. You're not going to be a good defensive player. That's what's held them back.
So you guys have called out Elam, you called out Bostic, you called out Jenkins. Is it just those three guys, or is it like more one of those guys than anybody else? Or like who are the biggest problems?
I just noticed those guys more than anybody else. Like, the defensive line hasn't been playing great, I guess. But I actually don't think the defensive line has been playing, like, terrible either. Like, I feel like Muschamp and Quinn have kind of thrown them under the bus a little bit and said the defensive line has to play better. But, like, you watch Dominic Easley, he's getting penetration even against Alabama and LSU. I don't think he's the biggest problem here.
No way.
Right. Ronald Powell also. Has he been playing football the last 2 weeks?
I haven't seen him do anything against the run. I haven't seen him get much pressure on the passer. There was the game against Tennessee where he had, like, a couple of quarterback hurries, and it was, like, a huge thing. Yeah. Since then, I haven't seen anything from him.
He has 2 sacks on the season in addition to those hurries, and he's got, I think, 3 quarterback hits. Like, he's been mediocre, and this is a guy coming into the season in the spring. Everybody said this is going to be, like, almost the focal point of the defense was how is he going to play, because he's going to be a defensive end and a linebacker. The whole season's going to hinge on him. He's going to be playing like Jason Taylor played back when Muschamp was coaching at the Miami Dolphins back when Dan Quinn was there. Jason Taylor was defensive MVP or the defensive player of the year, whatever the award is in the NFL that season. People had high expectations for Ronald Powell. He hasn't come close to meeting those at all. He's one of those guys I think that just has to get bigger in the offseason. Like, he's not very big.
His 2 sacks are deceptive, too, because one of them, I remember if it was one of the earlier games where, like, somebody forced the quarterback to step up, and he was just kind of there and jumped in and, like, kind of landed on the quarterback. And I don't, when you're getting that excited at that Tennessee game about 2 quarterback hurries that created interceptions, I think that kind of tells you the production you've gotten out of Ronald Powell this year, and that's kind of been the high point, I guess, truthfully, of his career so far. And that's really not what they need out of him.
Yeah, he's definitely been bad. He has not been able to rush the passer, and he can't hold his own against an offensive tackle in the running game either. So, but here's a problem I see, because who do you have behind him? Like, you kind of just have to ride this out with Ronald Powell. Who is his backup?
I think that's the reason he's not getting benched. People asked Dan Quinn about this. Is there any chance that he won't play? And they said no, because he is, like, the perfect athlete for that position. But it's also the fact that they have no one else that can play that position. And when your defense, like, if they want to try to run this 4-3 and 3-4 effectively, you kind of have to have that guy that can play both. And they've only got one guy who, like, makes sense in that position, and it's Ronald Powell. So it's kind of an issue where it's like, all right, even if he doesn't play good, we still have to have him out there because no one else can do it.
It's probably, I would say, William Green and Laurentay McCray being the other guys. But at this point, it's like William Green's had 3.5 years to do something, and he hasn't. So
right, and McCray's already playing on the other side. Yeah. So that would be putting William Green in there. And I don't know, because when we've seen him play this year, he's been down on the line. I don't know how he would play as a linebacker.
I mean, I guess in the 3-4, you could go, like, McCray, Bostic, Jenkins, and Michael Taylor. Like, that, I guess, would make sense. I don't know. But even that, like, Jenkins, like I said earlier, Jenkins hasn't played well either.
Right.
It's like, you can do all these jigsaw stuff, but at the end of the day,
nobody's good. It doesn't matter.
You fill in.
Yeah.
They don't have good linebackers.
Yeah, and then
going for Michael Taylor.
Yeah, we like Michael Taylor.
I like Laurentay McCray too.
Okay,
they're friends. Actually, I should say that I'm a pretty big fan of what we've seen from Laurentay McCray. Yeah, so
I'm okay
far.
With Laurentay. I'm not
I feel like he's.
Him.
I don't think he's been like a great pass rusher or whatever. But I think when we talk about how a lot of the linebackers are letting the play come to them, I think he's more of an aggressive guy who's been actually trying to make things happen, which is not what we've seen from all these guys. Part of the problem with the linebackers, I think, is that a lot of the offensive linemen have been able to get out to the second level at times, and to some extent that falls on the linemen because what they're being asked to do is hold 2 blocks very often. And what they talked about this week was that those guys have not been very good holding against 2 blockers and playing 2-gap defense. Have you guys agree with that assessment? Is that something you've seen?
I guess so. It wasn't something I really noticed. Some of the times when you look at that line of scrimmage battle, it's tough to notice. You have to kind of look at it on film and slow it down. And so maybe it is true. At the same time, you're asking Florida teams alignment to hold double teams against the best offensive lines in the nation.
Right.
That's going to be difficult, and it's going to result in some problems. I think that's what happened.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's kind of the issue. I feel like any offensive lineman gets one hand on those linebackers, it's pretty much over from there. That's what we've seen. So, yeah, I don't really know. It's interesting because you've got a guy like Easley who's creating so much havoc there, but once they seem to get around him, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and this is another thing I don't understand, is they're making it out to be like, if the offensive lineman gets on the linebacker, then the whole play is dead. Like, this is clearly the offensive line's fault. As a linebacker, you're trained to fight against that. You know what I mean? Like, you're trained to see a lineman coming at you, and you're supposed to, like, step around it or wrong arm it. Or there's different techniques that you're – it's not like they're just like, well – you're not going to run three. Find the guy with the ball, tackle him. If anyone comes near you that's trying to block you, then we're done. There's no way you can stop that. That's just football. Like, that's not the way it's being organized.
It's a backhanded way of admitting your linebackers are terrible.
Right. Because especially because those guys are so small that you can, if an offensive lineman with 50 pounds on him is getting near 50, probably like 100 for some of these guys, is getting near those linebackers, it's pretty much over. But I think when we look at Florida's defensive line, there's a lot more guys who are better pass rushers and kind of disruptors than actually guys who are going to hold their own against the run. Like, we talk about Easley's ability to penetrate and get in the backfield, kind of make havoc that way. Same thing with Floyd, who's kind of, like, trying to play some end and be more of a pass rush type. And I think even Jay Howard's kind of a penetrator, too. Do you guys agree on that, that it's more like a pass-defending defensive line better than what they can do against the run in terms of holding their own and making plays?
Yeah. I mean, they haven't really done that, though. That's the thing. Like, I don't really feel like they've affected the pass that much either. Like, I don't really know what this defensive line has done so far. I don't think they've been terrible, but I feel like they've just been kind of average at everything.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, I don't think that they're necessarily bad at defending the run. I don't think they're necessarily good at defending the run. Same way with the pass. I don't think they're bad or good. They're just sort of there.
I understand what you're saying, though. I think they are built for that. They just haven't really been that great at it so far.
It's still a smaller defensive line. As much hype as they've gotten, like, Dominic Easley's, what, 270, 280? Like, he's not, like, a huge defensive lineman. Sharif Floyd's, like, 290. I mean, he's big for a defensive end, but he's naturally a defensive tackle.
Right. They're more...
speed.
Yeah, and they're not really... Because in the 3-4, you want the big, tall, huge guys that can do the things you're talking about with holding two blockers and... playing two gaps, and apparently it's just not that kind of a team, so we'll see what they do with that. Looking at the secondary, they've been pretty solid the first 5 weeks, I thought, in terms of what they did against those teams. And then against LSU, they just, like, they got torched. It was Riggs got beat deep on a play, Roberson got beat deep on a play. So where are we at with that unit? Are they good? Are they bad? Like, what do we know at this point?
They're mediocre. More than anything else, they're young. That first touchdown pass that Jarrett Lee had, there's clearly a breakdown. Pop Saunders just didn't cover deep. Because I think Roberson was on defense on that play.
The Riggs. First one Riggs was
on defense. Riggs.
It looked like a zone to me, but everybody wanted to put it on Riggs.
It looked like Riggs kind of, like, let him go by him. I can't believe that Riggs is playing man-on-man and just got beat that bad. It was clear. I think it was Pop Saunders, because right after the play, and this is a great thing about Will Muschamp, is whoever messed up, you can figure out pretty quickly. Just watch Will Muschamp, because he's going to go right to that person and start yelling at him. And he yelled at Pop Saunders after that play. I think that was supposed to be safety help. So I think that's probably being a young team. You know what I mean? Like, they were so hell-bent on beating the run that they just couldn't stop the pass when they needed to. LSU only threw the ball like 14 times, but still had 215 yards passing.
Yeah, and part of it, I think, is that this is the best group of receivers the secondary's faced outside of when Justin Hunter went down early for Tennessee. I think that kind of made them a really average group. But that LSU group of receivers is actually pretty good. So it was kind of like LSU could do whatever they wanted, really. They could run the ball, obviously, with a lot of success. And then when they needed to throw the ball, they had a very high percentage of completed passes just because that Florida secondary, again, is so inexperienced.
Right. And I kind of agree with Tyler on this. That they're inexperienced, and it's kind of a wait and see with them. But one thing that I don't remember if it was you guys or the other podcast crew, but we were heaping a lot of praise on Marcus Roberson for what he's done so far. Are you guys kind of ready to temper those expectations, or what is your assessment of him at this point in the season?
Maybe a little bit. I still think he's played really well for a freshman, a guy that's kind of learning on the go. I still think he's going to be a really good player, but I don't think 1 week where he struggled is all that bad in a course of six games, especially for a freshman.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think we need to be getting knee-jerk reaction going too far down on him.
Right.
Maybe he's not the best cornerback in the nation. Like, some people might be trying to heap praise on him, maybe. But yeah, I think he's fine.
If anything, those guys should be in for kind of an easier week this weekend. Looking at LSU's injury report, wide receiver Trovon Reed is doubtful with a shoulder.
Well, I'm really glad that LSU's really hampered this week. That's really going to help Florida's DBs.
Auburn's injury report.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't know who Florida's playing. They're all nameless, faceless, so whatever. But Auburn wide receiver Trovon Reed is doubtful with a shoulder, and Auburn wide receiver Emery Blake is questionable with a foot. So should be a little bit easier on the secondary from that standpoint. And another thing to talk about with Auburn, kind of the guys throwing them the ball, Barrett Trotter's been their starter all season, but he has not looked that good against South Carolina against Arkansas last weekend. All the SEC teams are the same to me. Against Arkansas last weekend, he was something like 6 of 19. So they talked about playing quarterback Kyle Frazier, who is a freshman, kind of more of a running guy, has done some of the kind of wildcat stuff we've seen from Burton. That was actually what Coach Chizik compared it to when he talked this week. So in terms of Florida's preparation, do you think that they are going to have kind of an issue handling a two-quarterback system, or what do they have to do to worry about that? How's that changed things for them, if at all?
Well, they knew they had to face a two-quarterback system last week, and they were totally prepared for it, and it didn't seem to work out. But I don't think that was because they didn't know who was at quarterback, or just that the DBs didn't play well. I think it's a similar situation here, although maybe slightly different. You have your traditional pocket passer, and you have your scrambler. And I think that I honestly don't think it's that difficult to prepare for. I think it's pretty apparent. You see a guy, and they're like, oh, this guy is probably going to run the ball more. We've seen this on film. We just have to change the way we play a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's that difficult to prepare for, like some people make it out to be.
The other thing is, too, Trotter and Frazier are not as good as Lee and Jefferson. They're not as experienced, and they haven't played as much in the SEC as those guys have, but they're just not as good as them either.
All right, with that, we're going to move into this week's Gator Guarantees. We'll start with the recap of last week. Tyler, why don't you take us through what you went through and how that worked out for you?
What I went through, or what did I?
What you went through, because the Gator Guarantees are a real strenuous process. Yeah, between coming up with one and then monitoring it during the game and then checking the results after. It's a lot for you to go through, so that's why I phrased
really
it that way.
I don't really want to relive the experience, but since you're making me.
Well, you were right this week. You should want to.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I have to open some veins here, but I'm going to go with Jacoby Brissett was going to start over Jeff Driskel.
You're going to go with that.
That's my final answer.
Okay.
And that's what I said, right? And that's correct.
Okay. Yeah, so you won.
Yeah, there we go.
No, you had another one, too.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that second part. I predicted that whoever played quarterback for Florida, a.k.a. Jacoby Brissett, who I totally predicted, would have 3 turnovers. And he had 2. Now, I'm upset about this because I originally said 2, and you guys all goaded me into going to 3.
Nobody felt like 2 was a lot of turnovers.
It's not about a lot. It's about accurately predicting what's going to happen.
And that's so, if you Gator guaranteed that Chris Rainey would have 40 yards, like...
Yeah.
That would be great.
That would be accurate.
All right. You know what? I'm tired of you. Cody, what did you have last week?
I predicted, it's a little two-part one that we might not know until the spring, but I said that Spencer Ware will rush for 100 yards against Florida and hit a home run against them in the spring because he plays baseball, too. And he rushed for 109.
So we're halfway
there. So I'll get back to you in April.
Podcast listeners, I don't know if you noticed that Cody's voice just got like a lot higher when he started talking about baseball. Like, he hit a different octave real quick. You got so excited.
Really excited.
So
hit another home run.
He did it. Yeah, so we'll be back in the spring and let you know.
All right.
Hold the phone, podcast listeners. Just wait
Good
4
luck
months.
Falling asleep until then.
Right. Mine was that a wide receiver will not catch a pass against LSU, which is slightly more bold than 2 turnovers, I'll say. But anyway, I was looking good for a while. The first wide receiver catch was not until like 4 minutes in the first half when I think Frankie Hammond caught a curl. So, and then they only had 2 for the game, so I mean, not bad. I'm not going to give myself any credit because I lost, but
what was it? You said
it's a fair effort.
I totally zoned out. You said 0 catches?
Yeah, okay. Yep, 0 catches. So close, but no cigar. Tyler, how about this week? What do you have for us?
This week, I'm going to predict that for the second week in a row, Michael Taylor will take Jelani Jenkins' spot on the defense.
Do you think there's any chance he starts?
Yeah, there's a chance.
How big is that chance?
You want a percentage?
37%.
Yeah, why not?
I'd say 39%.
Oh.
The 39% chance that he starts.
That's pretty high. Are you actually thinking about this, or are you just throwing a number out there?
Well, I mean, I think there's a... Like, I wouldn't be shocked to see him start. I wouldn't be that surprised to see him start.
All right.
But I still think Jelani Jenkins probably will start. But I think Michael Taylor will take over his spot at some point in the game.
Do you think by some
As
point,
I originally said.
Do you think at some point in the season he'll take over his job, like long term, or... It's too, you're not going to guarantee that.
This isn't part of my Gator Guarantee. My Gator Guarantee is
closed. No, your Gator Guarantee is closed.
Okay, my Gator Guarantee is closed, so I've locked that in. I think he will take the spot by mid-November.
Okay.
So with a couple games left in the season, he'll have taken that spot.
I like that. It's a fair prediction. Cody, what do you think this week?
I'm going to say that freshman quarterback Kyle Frazier Counts for 3 touchdowns for Auburn.
Really? That's an Auburn player, not a Florida player. Got really excited about freshman quarterback.
That's true. And, right. And just so we're clear, before we started the segment, Tyler actually talked me up from 2 to 3. So when he actually does 2, I can get mad at Tyler.
Okay.
And
yeah, because 2's not bold, okay? Who cares about 2?
So, I would have said 2 I would have said 2 touchdowns for Kyle Frazier. Pretty bold. Is there something about Kyle Frazier you like? Or?
I just think he's their best quarterback, and there's kind of a little quarterback controversy there. Enough to where Gene Chizik had to come out and say that Trotter was their starter. So I think Frazier will get quite a bit of play time and maybe, I don't know, we could have some Tebow leak stuff going on where they all want Tebow and everything like that. So I don't know. We'll see what happens, but I just like his skill set quite a bit.
Yeah, and all right, that's fair. Mine is 2 of Jeff Demps, Chris Rainey, and Mike Gillislee will rush for 100 yards. I think given Auburn's defense and kind of the emerging Gillislee thing, maybe Florida's running game gets back on track this week. So that's what I'm going with. I don't know if it'll lead to a win, but I think that those guys will do pretty well for themselves.
All right, we've locked in the Gator guarantee for you. Now, who of those two do you think are going to do their thing?
Who's
going to rush for over 100 yards?
Oh, I would say Rainey and Gillislee. I'm worried about Demps' ankle.
Like a question
that's
mark
the thing.
At the end of that one.
I'm worried about Demps' ankle. If I knew he was 100%, which he probably won't be, I might even say all 3 of them, but for now, I'm going to go with Rainey and Gillislee.
Yeah, I go with Rainey and Gillislee. I'm still not trusting Jeff Demps' ankle.
Right. Okay.
Do you want to do score predictions?
We didn't do that. Good catch. All right. Start it off then. What do you got for us?
All right. I got Auburn winning this one 28-21.
28-21. Okay. So Florida
scores 21 points.
That seems about average. Like, I was going to say, normally you give me a prediction and I say, you think they're going to score that many or you think they're going to score that few, but that seems pretty reasonable. I got nothing to criticize you on this week. Cody, what are you looking at?
I'm going to take Auburn 31-28 on a field goal.
What? That's mine.
No, it's not. It's Cody's.
What?
I was going to say 31-28.
But you're not
Auburn.
Now.
Well, you better start thinking of a new one.
Okay.
Right now.
I'll take 31-28 on an Auburn kicks a field goal as time expires.
Who you got, Greg?
Okay, I'll take 31-27, Auburn. That's my new prediction.
That's way off.
How does Florida get to 27 instead of 28? Missed extra point?
Kick some field goals.
Okay, so 3 touchdowns and 2 field goals?
Maybe.
That adds up to 27.
It could be like a 6 field goal, touchdown, 2-point conversion safety kind of thing.
Or could be 3 touchdowns and 2 field goals.
Maybe. Like I said.
Yeah, maybe.
Or
but,
it could be 3 touchdowns
maybe
and 2
not.
Field goals.
No, guys, it's 3.
This is what's going to happen.
We're getting way too specific here. Anyway, so anything else I forgot as far as the game preview goes?
No.
I think we're good? All right, so then we'll kick it over to email. We only have one this week. It's from Marshall Spivak. He said, guys, I've been saying since the beginning of the season, start Gillislee and more O'Hines too. Go Gators. Still not a lot from Hines. Do we think he can touch the ball this week? He's getting all the fakes on the Rainey Wildcat stuff. Any chance Omarius Hines touches the ball? Give me more percentages, Tyler.
He will receive 100% of the fakes.
Okay.
He's real good on the fakes. I think that he's been locked in the mysterious room that Ronald Powell has been in. You don't even know if he played or not.
Yeah. But
Hines is getting a chance. Powell's had plenty of chances.
Yeah, it's true. Trey Burton was locked in that room also before the Alabama game.
Hide the key.
That's true. I didn't even think about that because we always hear so much about Trey Burton.
Yeah,
he's
was
a very popular guy. But
he didn't
do a ton for most of this season. Anyway, I guess that about wraps up the show for this week.
You want to give us emails and Twitters and all that?
Yeah, that's what I say. I think that about wraps up the show. And then I say send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org.
Make sure.
You can subscribe on iTunes. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/alligatorpodcast. And you can follow us on Twitter @AlligatorSports for just the generic sports stuff. You can follow me @GregLuca. You can follow Tyler Jett.
@Tyler_Jett. I feel like you know that at this point.
Yeah, but I was
you wanted me
saying.
To say it. Got it. Yeah. Tyler,
welcome to the show. Is it your first time?
Yeah, I'm new here.
All right, and Cody, you could read off yours for us and tell us what's going on at FightingGators.com.
Yeah, I'm a C. Jones scout.
No longer C. Jones F.I. Gators. That was a lot of fun.
The headache-worthy Twitter handle is gone. Way past due, actually, but I finally remembered to do it. So anyway, FightingGators.com. We kind of do a little bit of everything, football, basketball, baseball. The lifeblood of the site is recruiting, all sorts of recruiting coverage about this year's class, next year's recruiting class, and everything. Plenty of baseball stuff, fall baseball, and now get into basketball coverage as well. So a little bit of everything, message boards, and a lot of people like that kind of stuff too. So we got a little bit of everything.
Very good. And let's see, next week it's going to be interesting with the bye week. I assume we'll come with our normal Monday show. I don't know when we're going to get these guys back in here next. Maybe we'll do some basketball stuff next week. We're just coming off Media Day, get John Booth in here, our basketball writer, and have a little talk a little bit about that stuff. But we'll see how the bye week goes. If there's some news that we think is worth discussing, we can definitely bring you a show on that, or at least a segment on that. So check us out on Monday, and until then, thanks for listening.